Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
One of you has to go. Either the DA and with her the entire office, or Nathan Wade. This will be the easiest decision the DA's office has ever had to make. Obviously, Nathan Wade will go. And the judge in his ruling says essentially this is necessary to preserve public confidence in this case. He says there's enough of an appearance. There's enough of, as he says at one point, an odor of mendacity around this case. Interesting phrase. That something's got to be done to at least clean up the public.
Clean up the public perception? Was Fani Willis guilty of an impropriety or not? In your estimation, Judge, what you gave us is this very fascinating Sophie's Choice. But we should be clear, Fani Willis, the district attorney in Fulton County, bringing the charges against Donald Trump for election impropriety, utilizing RICO, the racketeering predicates, to go after 18 co-defendants. She doesn't look good here.
There are reasonable questions about whether the DA testified untruthfully. Any one of these statements by a judge would be a career ender. For a normal prosecutor to have an on-the-record finding that there are reasonable questions about whether you lied under oath, that would be devastating. And we'll see what the political effects will be. The bottom line, the DA survives, but not without serious bruising, to use your analogy, sir.
Well, yeah. And the case will continue. Because if the judge said, no, you can't bring this case, could have actually ended the whole thing. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669-833-GOT-TONY. William Jacobson, Cornell Law Professor, the mind behind LegalInsurrection.com, is scheduled to be with us a little bit later, and we're going to break this down with him. So I'm going to save a lot of the questions for him. I will, however, note a couple of things here. Yes, if the choice is no case or Nathan Wade, her lover, being thrown out, she's thrown out her lover. And that's exactly what he was. She paid him more than other prosecutors would have been paid. They had a sexual relationship. And then he took them on vacations where she allegedly paid him back in cash. If you ask me, I don't think anything ever got paid back. This has all of the hallmarks of a kickback. That's exactly what it is. There's no other way, I think, to view it. And if you want to tell me that it's not a kickback, you can. But my plan is to laugh at you out loud, probably in front of your friends, because you're out of your mind. You're out of your head, crazy. Of course, it was a kickback, and I can't imagine that a judge didn't see it that way. It seems impossible to me that a judge could have seen it any other way. That's not the only story going on, although it is huge, and we will break it down. We, of course, discussed yesterday the insanity of the position from Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer deciding, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go get myself involved in the Israeli elections, and I'm going to call for fresh elections to take place.
On the Israeli side, the U.S. government should demand that Israel conduct itself with a future two-state solution in mind. We should not be forced into a position of unequivocally supporting the actions of an Israeli government that include bigots who reject the idea of a Palestinian state. Israel is a democracy. 5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
A lowlife. A worthless lowlife. He is absolutely interjecting himself into Israeli politics. The Senate Majority Leader calling for a new election doesn't call for new elections in Gaza regarding Hamas. Doesn't call for Hamas or for the quote-unquote Palestinian people to have better leadership. No, only the Israelis. The Israelis in the main don't like Netanyahu. Netanyahu has, you know, remember, everything, all politics are local. He's got indictments he's dealing with. He's got personalities that people don't like. He's desperate to hold on to power. He's got a very strange coalition that involves the ultra-Orthodox, and the ultra-Orthodox want legislation that states that they do not have to serve in the military. Remember, it's Israel. When you're 18, if you're a woman, you'll do 2 years of service, and if you're a man, you'll do 3 years of service. The ultra-Orthodox make the claim that we're studying Torah, we're studying religion, so therefore that's our service and we don't have to serve. I am not somebody who believes this at all. I believe one way or another you have to serve. The ultra-Orthodox, you should also be fully aware, for a fair amount of them, they don't think Israel should exist. Israel should only exist when the Messiah comes, so this is all a mistake. But they still live there, and they still benefit from the society and benefit from the protection, and then rail about the society that's protecting them. It's a very odd thing that happens. As I heard from soldiers and people who have previously served, I don't know if I want these people serving next to me. They're not seriously committed. Well, there's 900 other things these guys can do, like, for example, peel potatoes, so that those who are on the front lines can eat. Well, Tony, we're studying, and that is our service, because if we are not studying and praying, well, then the military doesn't stand a chance. I like the power of prayer. I think the power of prayer is extremely important, and I think the power of prayer works. You know what else works? M16s. So let's not kid ourselves. As I have remarked before on this subject, when God gives you something, that's part one. Part two is what you do with it. If you tell me about the five books of Moses, the Torah, he can give it to you. But I'm pretty sure you actually have to do the work of studying it. You have this nation, you actually have to go about defending it. And yes, you have to serve. So I look at this coalition that Netanyahu is trying to keep through this idea of giving the ultra-Orthodox what they want, not serving. And I say, I can understand how that's a problem for a lot of Israelis. But Schumer calling for an election when saying nothing about elections for Hamas is just proof of the absolute hatred. What happens when one's ideology supplants one's humanity? Danny Dannon is the former Israeli ambassador to the UN. He was on Fox News this morning.
You know, we are not happy with the details of the proposal, but it's an opening. We are willing to continue with the negotiations. And mind, I will tell you that this morning, we are willing to pay a heavy price to bring back the hostages. We're talking about children, women who are in captivity, ongoing atrocities in the tunnels of Hamas that we learned about. But one thing we will not compromise, and that's our demand not to stop the war until Hamas is eradicated. I think that's the core issue. On that issue, we cannot compromise. Mm-hmm. On the other thing, we are open for discussions. We are open to pay a heavy price. We want to see those hostages back home.
Now, if you didn't understand him, they're up for this ceasefire. And right now, there is the possibility of a ceasefire. Hamas has put forth a ceasefire plan that includes a 10-to-1 exchange of hostages. Now, if you saw my videos from my trip to Israel, we knew that this was possible because Hamas has been brutalized in Gaza. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, have destroyed Hamas strongholds, destroyed these cities, and destroyed these battalions. There may only be 2 to 4 to 6 battalions left in Gaza. And yes, Israel is going for Rafah. This is what Joe Biden and others have been saying. Oh, you can't do that. Israel's going to do it. And you just heard Danny Dannon say exactly that. But they want the prisoners back. So this deal that's been put forward, and you've got Qatar and Egypt and the U.S. acting as mediators, would be the release of Israeli women, children, elderly, and sick hostages in exchange for the release of 700 to 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. Now, some have said that Netanyahu is going to reject the proposal because it's unrealistic. I must say that I don't think that's going to be the case. If there is an opportunity to get back the women, the children, remember, they kidnap babies and sick hostages. If there's an opportunity to get them back, they're going to take it. The public pressure in Israel is overwhelming on this subject. And I have video of this if you go to TonyKatz.com or on Rumble at Tony Katz, of some of the protests that take place to get the hostages back. It's not that these people don't want Hamas destroyed. Hamas is getting destroyed. And then you have to deal with Hezbollah to the north. And of course, you're going to have to deal with Iran, who is the funder of all these things. And never mind what the Houthi rebels are going to be shooting at you from Yemen. They're going to do what they can to get as many people back alive as possible. That's going to come. But the idea of Israel stopping, that's not happening. That is not happening. And even if there were to be a new election, or be an election and have a new prime minister, it wouldn't stop. This is right now a unity government. You have got people in this government like Yoav Gallant. He is the Minister of Defense. He's not a fan of Netanyahu. Not at all. You have Benny Gantz. Benny Gantz is referred to as a minister without portfolio. He's there. He was the Minister of Defense. He was the alternate prime minister. He's got a history. He was Netanyahu's chief of staff for a while. That's what I thought he was. People divide. It's Israel. There are 27 different political parties. Either one of these guys could end up being prime minister. You know what happens? Hamas still gets destroyed. This isn't changing. This is what makes Chuck Schumer's speech so disgusting and makes those people who support him so absolutely horrific and gross. What Chuck Schumer advocated for was Israel accepting being destroyed. Hey, Israel, you've done enough. Now let Hamas regroup and kill you again. It's okay. Let them murder another 1,300. Let them fly into another music festival. Let them burn down another kibbutz. Go on, let them. That's what Chuck Schumer argued for. You want to debate this? Sure. Israel is unified in the destruction of Hamas and them living in peace. And once Hamas is gone, you can actually have some kind of two-state solution possibility. If, of course, you actually want to believe that there's a Palestinian people. But that would be going back in history, and I don't know if we have the time for that. I'm Tony Katz. Oh,
Tonight, Chicago officials are trying to keep up with an outbreak of measles hitting multiple communities, including two public schools. Overall, the city reporting 10 cases in just 1 week. 8 of those infections found here at a single city migrant shelter.
At this point, would you say this situation is under control?
Well, measles is quite contagious, and it spreads among those who are not vaccinated. So we are trying to get it under control by vaccinating as many people as possible.
Chicago's committee.
Now, she's not wrong. That is the health director there in Chicago. You've brought in these people from other countries. You didn't ask whether or not it was safe. You just said if we don't bring them in, we're a bunch of no good, dirty racists. And they bring diseases with them. Everybody who is anybody knows they bring diseases with them. Tony Katz today, good to be with you. That's just factual. Other nations are not the United States. They don't have the technology we have. They don't have a mass vaccinated populace. So I have supported from the beginning the vaccination. You tell me about the cost. The cost is greater if measles starts to spread. The cost is greater. This is not a, oh, you're giving in to the illegal immigrants. No, I'm recognizing a safety issue, as opposed to the mayor of Chicago, who once again proves himself to be the biggest fool out there.
Chicago's mayor says don't blame the migrants.
They didn't bring illness. In fact, migrants are more vulnerable to the existing infectious diseases that we already have here.
Then they shouldn't come. Don't come to America. We'll kill you. That's the argument that Mayor Brandon Johnson is making. Don't blame them. It's our fault. We are once again murderers. Oh, holy. Holy hell. This measles thing is weird. And when I say weird, I mean a danger. Hundreds could be infected in California and Arizona. It's a year's worth of outbreaks in 2 months. I love how Daily Mail has it. The issue is Biden's open border policy and anti-vaxxers. So this is a herd immunity conversation. If you have a certain percentage of the population vaccinated, you're not going to see levels of real issue-matic, problematic spread. It's just not what you see. So the idea that all of a sudden we're seeing an uptick in measles with no other contributing factors, then you could have a conversation about vaccination efficacy, and whether or not people are getting vaccinated writ large. Right? That's reality. But since we know that there is an extenuating factor, the open border, well, now we can apply it to something. When you do not have valuable border policies, when you do not ensure the protection of your citizenry by keeping certain people out, this is what you get. This is exactly what you see. You see damage and danger, which is exactly what we have. Now, what is the damage done by not throwing Fannie Willis off the case? Fannie Willis gets to remain to go after Donald Trump, but if she stays, her lover, Nathan Wade, the prosecutor, he has to go. How does this change the case against Trump, this RICO action to try and claim a conspiracy to fix the 2020 election? William Jacobson, Cornell Law Professor and the mind behind LegalInsurrection.com, scheduled to be with us coming up in just a second. We're going to break this down, and whether or not the judge made the right call or whether he was trying to split the baby and created more of a mess. This is Tony Katz Today. It is a split the baby conversation. And I'm not quite sure if this is helpful or if this is problematic. But you have the question of whether or not Fani Willis, the district attorney in Fulton County, was engaged in impropriety. We learned about her lover, Nathan Wade, who's the prosecutor, the special prosecutor, who she was having a sexual relationship with. He was taking her on vacations, and she allegedly reimbursed him in cash. No, I don't believe that's what happened. Tony Katz today, good to be with you. But the question was, is Fani Willis able to carry on this case against President Trump, utilizing RICO, going after him for trying to fix an election in 2020? And the judge in the case, Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee, says, well, if I close my left eye and squint a little bit, maybe. William Jacobson joins us right now, Cornell law professor, the mind behind Legal Insurrection. .com. Walk me through what it is that the judge in this case, Scott McAfee, said, and how you translate that ruling.
Well, it was quite a ruling. You mentioned split the baby. That is one way I've heard it described. I think it's probably a little worse than that, because he found really impropriety went on, and it went on between two prosecutors, and he's leaving one of them in place. Okay, and he's letting them pick which one will remain in place. So it's a very odd result. I think he was very cautious in, you know, his decision, other than the result, which is strange, and applied what he believed to be the standards of conduct. He did not find an actual conflict of interest. I'm with you. I'm not buying that she paid for her trips in cash. Okay, I'm not buying that for a second, but he said there was no direct proof otherwise. So I think he was very cautious. I think he recognized that one or more of them lied on the stand, because there was a reference in there that this may be something to be considered by others, like the disciplinary board in Georgia and the Bar Association in Georgia, but it's not really relevant to his determining this motion. So he was very cautious, really tried to stay in what he viewed as his lane legally. But the result is kind of absurd. I mean, the result is very strange. You found strong evidence of an appearance of impropriety here, and you're leaving one of the two people who created that appearance of impropriety in the case. Why? They should both go. You know, he was very cautious, very careful, but at the end came up with a result that I don't think makes a lot of sense.
And so there's this idea that when you try to make everybody happy, you don't make anybody happy. And that would lead one to think that this was a political decision, not a legal decision. Walk me through a legal part of this, which is, if there is a lawyer in a case engaged in whatever the level of impropriety, regardless of the surrounding circumstances of the impropriety, what is there a usual standard that is applied?
Well, this is a little different, first of all, than the usual case. This is a prosecutor, and a prosecutor has a higher duty. You know, everybody's got to tell the truth, and everybody's got to comply with the ethics rules, but a prosecutor really has a duty to the public that a attorney representing a private individual doesn't. And so that's, I think, makes his decision worse, not better. And, you know, so in the prosecutorial context, and he did go through this, that they have to be in Georgia. It's a mandatory disqualification only if you find an actual conflict of interest. And he found not an actual conflict of interest. He found that it had not been sufficiently proven that she financially benefited from the arrangement. Of course, anybody watching that and hearing it knows, of course, she financially benefited. But the judge found it wasn't proven in court. And so that's the standard. He said, so he can't kick her off because there's no other allegations here other than, you know, conflict of interest. There's no claim she should be kicked off for testifying falsely. That could be the next motion, but that's not before him right now. And so the only standard in Georgia is an actual conflict of interest. He said there is another possibility which is not really clear in Georgia, but he believed does exist in the court's inherent power, which was the perception, public perception of impropriety and the appearance of impropriety. And he thinks that is sufficient, but that does not require disqualification. And it was his judgment that given all of the evidence that came in, given that there was no direct conflict of interest, that the appearance of impropriety would be relieved for the court's purposes if one of the two left the case. I don't agree with that. I think once you found it, they both need to go. But that was his reasoning.
So let's take a moment to dig into that. Talking to William Jacobson, Cornell Law Professor, LegalInsurrection.com. Hey, you guys did something that wasn't right. So you decide which one of you is punished. That doesn't sound like, and for a lot of people, they're shaking their head in agreement with you, sir. That doesn't sound like judge talk. I know you guys did something that wasn't okay. You figure out who's to blame, and then we can move on. Isn't the entirety of the case? Couldn't the Trump team now say, whoa, this isn't enough? Do they then appeal it forward? What is their process from here?
Yeah, well, I think you're right, and that's a piece I think I left out. What makes it even more bizarre is he's letting them decide which one goes, okay? So it's like you arrest two people for a crime they both committed, and you let them decide which one of them will be prosecuted. So that's going to put her in an interesting decision. Is she going to cut off the cash flow to her, you know, her lover, or is she going to remove herself? If she removes herself, then the case goes to a different district attorney's office. He's just a special assistant district attorney. So it's just an entirely bizarre procedure to not say they both go and then to leave it up to them which one of them goes. That's just very strange. In terms of process, I'm going to assume this is some sort of appealable order. I don't know that. I haven't looked into that in Georgia. Even if it's not absolutely appealable, they could also always request leave to appeal, because why would you want to go on with this whole case only to have whatever the verdict is thrown out because the prosecutors were conflicted? So I would think an appeals court would want to hear it. Whether it's required to hear it, I don't know, under Georgia law, but that's their process. Yes, I would expect Trump's team, or actually this motion was not brought by Trump, it was brought by a co-defendant. I would expect their team to try to appeal this and try to say, you know, the judge was wrong, and the remedy here, based on the judge's findings of an appearance of impropriety, that based on his findings, the remedy needed to be get these prosecutors off the case, not let the prosecutors decide which one of them leaves. So I think that we may likely see even more delay here if the appeals court is willing to hear this case, and I think they should. I don't think we should go through a trial in a high-profile case like this involving a former president and presidential likely nominee in the middle of a general election when the whole process may be tainted. I think an appeals court needs to look at that.
Now, something else happened in this case, which involves a speech that Fani Willis gave on Martin Luther King Day, which is referred to by Trump's legal team, the lawyer being Steve Sadow, S-A-D-O-W, as extrajudicial. Here, let me play this for you.
I hired one white man, brilliant, my friend, and a great boy. And I hired one black man, another superstar, a great friend, and a great lawyer. First thing they say, oh, she gonna play the race card now.
All right.
Now, that was a speech that she gave at a church. And that speech, it has been argued, including by people on CNN and other places, that this is out of control. This was unbelievably inappropriate for her to do. This puts her in a place of real questioning of whether or not she has tainted a jury pool by having this extrajudicial conversation. Talk to me about the constraints when one is dealing with a case, and should the judge, in your view, have put more weight on these comments?
Well, as I recall from the decision, the judge found those comments to be improper, but not something to be considered on this motion. I think he said it could be considered later on something, if I'm remembering correctly, from the decision. So I don't think that's done. There could be a motion made for to dismiss the case for improper jury tampering, essentially, improper publicity. But on the motion to disqualify, he found he didn't need to make that decision, but he almost invited them, which would be all the defendants, but he invited them to make a motion. I mean, he didn't literally invite them, but from his suggestion was that this really would be something we would consider on a motion addressed to improper pretrial publicity, that's when he would consider it, but he didn't need to consider it on this matter before him.
And that's a whole nother part of this, that people are going to focus on what the judge has said regarding splitting the baby. All right, Fonnie Willis, you either go or your lover goes, right? It's one or the other. What you're discussing is this part two, that there are now other places where Trump or one of the 18 co-defendants, because this is a RICO case, a racketeering case, they're bringing in all these people, providing all these charges to try and squeeze people to get at Trump, where they could say, wait a second, this lawyer, this prosecutor, this DA, I should say, has been inappropriate. There's a problem. I can't get a fair trial. This whole thing has to be thrown out, or at least has to move jurisdictions, and we have to delay. That part of it is what you're saying most probably will be coming in the days ahead.
I would think so. And that would potentially taint the entire trial. It wouldn't just taint whether Fannie Willis can stay on the case. So that would be actually a much bigger motion, probably resulting in a change of venue, that they may have to move this to another part of Georgia if the Atlanta pool has been tainted by improper pretrial publicity by the prosecutor. So Trump may get a more favorable location in Georgia. I don't think they'd have to move it out of the state. But if I think that might be coming. I would expect it would be coming in one form or another.
Before I let you go, talking to William Jacobson, Cornell Law Professor, LegalInsurrection.com, I wanted to ask you about Chuck Schumer, the senator from New York, and his commentary about having elections. Israel should have elections and get rid of Netanyahu. Netanyahu is the problem. You have been certainly outspoken about being Jewish, about support for Israel. You're on lists of people who are influencers in this space. You have dealt with threats because of it. Your take on Chuck Schumer calling for a new election in the middle of a war and getting engaged in Israeli politics?
Yeah, so you're only going to leave me a minute or two to completely rant on Chuck Schumer? That's not fair. Have me back for a 30-minute segment, please. It's disgusting what he did. Okay, it's pandering. It's pandering to the anti-Israel Democratic base, the pro-Hamas vote in Michigan. It is the worst thing he could possibly have done, because he's trying to divide the Jewish community. He knows there's, in the American Jewish community, which is overwhelmingly liberal, he knows there's, you know, some dislike for Netanyahu. And what he's trying to do, he's trying to separate Israel and Netanyahu, which has been Biden administration policy. I wrote about this about 2 weeks ago. That's where they're going, to distinguish. Well, we hate Netanyahu, but we love Israel. Well, they're in the middle of a war, okay? And why do they hate Netanyahu so much right now? It's because he's refusing to capitulate to the American president and the American Secretary of State, who want Hamas to survive. They do. You can't read their actions any other way. Hamas now exists only in Rafah, 4 battalions by all counts, which is thousands of Hamas fighters. That's where the leadership is. That's where the hostages is. And all of American policy for the last 2 to 3 weeks, maybe months, has been to try to bully Israel into not finishing off Hamas. And now Chuck Schumer steps in and picks up that cudgel, and he hits Netanyahu over the head, And why is he hitting that, you know, over the head? It's because he's been too uncompromising. You know, I think there's going to be a huge, there is a huge backlash to this. I think what Schumer did is disgraceful. He's trying to walk it back. Too late, Chuck. You will not walk it back. Your legacy will be that you betrayed not just the Jewish people, but you betrayed Western civilization and your own country with these comments at a critical moment in history. Because let's face it, the people Israel is fighting in Gaza and elsewhere are enemies of the United States. They are enemies of Western civilization. What they did on October 7th, they would do to us in a heartbeat if they could. And Chuck Schumer is fighting to prevent them from being destroyed. It's disgraceful. He will never live this down.
Next time I give you the full 30 minutes. That's all there is to it. That is William Jacobson, Cornell Law Professor, LegalInsurrection.com. Always appreciate you, sir. More is coming up. I'm Tony Katz. Ladies and gentlemen, pain is racist. Not T-Pain, pain. It's the Pain Equity Project. This is a thing. I guess it's been out for a while, but right now it's just making the rounds. Tony Katz today. The Pain Equity Project is a long-term commitment to champion equitable and accessible pain relief. What may I ask? Aspirin is not available to people who are black? Ibuprofen? The sources of pain bias in the U.S. date back hundreds of years and are deeply rooted in racism. From 1845 to 1849, the myth that black people feel less pain was indoctrinated into health practices. We're all crazy. There are people who desperately want it. They want the division anywhere they can get it. I've got some more on this. Because of a question that was asked to Juwan Howard, men's basketball coach at Michigan. We've hit new levels of nutty because people are desperate for division. I've got that coming up. This is Tony Katz today.